and it's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Blah, 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 blah,
good
blah.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives. Good morning, folks. Good morning to Marinos and Sons Fish, my friends. I got a little history. How are you, Mark Riley?
I'm doing all right, man.
Kayla, you okay?
I'm good.
How the hell did you get a cold? You got a cold?
In the middle of summer. I think my girlfriend.
What are you? You're like a month behind everyone else. We all got through it.
My white cells are just so good.
Oh, really? Maybe you just broke down. Maybe troubles at home have got you a little stressed out, my friend.
Here we go. Go ahead, man. Give him some advice.
What you got to do? Relocate your girlfriend to California. That everything takes place on the phone. But if there's ever a real problem, you have no recourse. If they hang up on you, you're up the creek, boy. If they ever go, that's it. Wait, but I have to travel 2,500 miles to resolve this. Anyway, it's a little loud. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to jostle you people out there. That's what my wife always says. Don't jostle me. I didn't mean to jostle the folks just getting up. But listen, I got a little history about the Marino and Sons fish market. 1930s. It was founded by their great-grandfather, so a cousin and a couple of the grandsons now. But they're all your age, Riley, like 90. And,
thanks, Lowe. Yeah, they get around with a walker like Rehnquist.
No, in their 50s. I got a little wild. I had two fish stories yesterday. Like, this matters. We got bigger stories, but I got fish from Marino and Sons in Astoria, and I got fish from... Dude, I go to the green market in Union Square. Now, there are many green markets all over
the city, but that's the most famous one.
It's a big one, right? And I go to this place. There's this place... I'm talking food this morning. What can I tell you? There's a place, this Blue Moon fish stand. I'm pretty sure it's owned and operated by lesbians. I'm making a judgment call, but you know, from what I can tell, it's operated by lesbians.
Did you ask, or are you just
going on
appearance?
I am going on appearance, Riley.
Okay.
And I don't judge it. I just think it's kind of a unique situation.
So they look like lesbians.
They're from upstate New York, but they do this, man, listen to me, I'm like Mr. Food Guy. They make this dry, a smoked tuna and bluefish. Like,
really?
Yeah, it tastes like whitefish.
Oh,
it's
wait
genius.
A minute. You mentioned that. You mentioned
oh,
this
Oh, my
before.
God. I'm like, it's one of my small pleasures. One of my little pleasures in life, Riley, is I get done with the show, I go exercise, go home, and I prepare food like I own a restaurant. And I look at my three dumb cats who are laying around like they're dead or they have malaria or some sort of drooping sickness because of the humidity. And I sit there and I make food. Oh, what can I tell you?
Right.
I went to the green market. I made this... I got to find out whether I can say that on the radio or not. I'm sure I can.
What? Ask Chris. He knows.
Nothing.
Come on. Anything I can...
I'll talk about what I made later. Just remind me. But you're going to be all right, Chris? We've got an email about you later, too.
Yeah.
About a little altercation that we had on the air yesterday. Let's not go into it. Let's save it.
Okay.
Let's get into the news here because there are things happening right here in our very city. A group of white men jumped out of a 2005 black Cadillac Escalade and chased, I guess, three black men down, and one of them fell, and they beat the hell out of him, and he's in serious condition. Now, this is a pretty loaded neighborhood, considering its history, right, Riley?
Well, yeah, this is Howard Beach, which, of course, was the scene 19 years ago of an altercation between a group of white men and, I believe it was three black men.
Like a dozen guys, though.
It was about a dozen guys. One guy, Michael Griffith, was chased onto, I believe it was the Belt Parkway, and killed.
Mm.
And it was a racial flashpoint here in New York for a number of years. There was a special prosecutor that came in. There were a number of situations in the immediate aftermath, including an allegation never proved that the police ended up smacking one of the black men who were the victims in that case.
Mm.
But now this incident took place just blocks from where that incident took place, which kind of indicates that maybe things haven't changed as much racially as folks would have us believe here in New York City.
In the cultural memory, in the cultural, symbology, Howard Beach has since 1986 represented, and I'm sure before that to some people, but since in my mind, in the cultural mind, just the term Howard Beach represents racial tension.
Well, yeah, and it's certainly going to do so now. Apparently, they... arrested one 19-year-old young man from Howard Beach, Nicholas Minucci. He is being charged with assault in the first degree as a hate crime. That carries a sentence of 8 to 25 years. Now, Mark, some people don't believe that there ought to be any additional penalties for hate crimes, but we do have a hate crimes law here in New York that does mandate additional penalties if it turns out that racial or sexual hatred the hatred of someone's sexual identification or identity played a role in some kind of violent crime against people.
Well, there were racial epithets used. There was it's a strange story because apparently one of the guys who was beat up admitted to being in the neighborhood to steal a car.
Now, what kind of lunatic ends up getting the crap kicked out of him? And then when the police question him, say, well, I was there at 3 o'clock, even though they had committed no crime.
Yeah.
And the guys that were involved allegedly in this attack had no clue what they were in the neighborhood for.
Right. That one of them made like an accusation that he was looking at his jewelry or that, you know, this is what you get if you come to rob white guys.
Yeah, and which is a kind of bizarre aspect of this. But I see what happens in New York a lot of times, and I've seen this over the long term, Mark, is that, okay, so these guys, one of them or more of them admit that they may have been in the neighborhood to steal a car, and then everybody jumps in, well, look, it's not that big of a deal. They kicked the crap out of them. After all, they were thieves.
Well, that's it. So you read a story like that, and people who are into sort of the vigilante justice mode of operations or the mode of thinking, like they got it coming.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, given the history of the neighborhood, given the racial breakdown of the assault, and given the epithets used at the end of the assault, which was quoted in the story, you know, you do. It is loaded. It can be prosecuted as a hate crime, and I think it's tragic in relation to what we were talking about yesterday, which is that, you know, racism in this country, and certainly institutionalized racism and racism on a day to day basis, outside of just, you know, tolerating who you work with, is still a very real and very tangible thing in this culture.
Well, yeah, and you know, we talked about it in terms of the South yesterday, and now this happens in the North.
Yep.
And what it says, I think, is that there are certain attitudes that are hard to change and are hard to get rid of. And it really doesn't have all that much to do with whether you're south of the Mason-Dixon line or north of the Mason-Dixon line.
That's right. So also here in New York, the new Freedom Tower design features, apparently they revealed it yesterday, the new design that's been approved features attack precautions. The building has been placed farther away from the street than it was originally planned. It was like 25 feet. Now they pushed it back to 90 feet.
Yep.
Apparently the structural design is reinforced steel and supposed to be more resistant to truck bombs. They have extra wide emergency staircases along with elevators and communications equipment that will be encased in 3-foot thick walls. Apparently, if a plane is heading towards the building, it can bend like if the plane
what,
is
duck? Goes,
yeah, the building can actually duck or dodge, and if necessary, run across the river to New Jersey. Sounds crazy, but you know, with technology, you know what I'm saying?
Well, you know, this is, it's interesting because there's an article in today's New York Times that absolutely savages this new design.
Mm-hmm.
The design that is ending up coming out now is kind of a hybrid, as was the original design for the Freedom Tower, because, you know, the guy who owned the land where or actually had the lease on the property where the World Trade Center was located had one thing in mind. And, of course, the state and the city had something else in mind. So they had to kind of bring two sets of architects together for this amalgamation. Now, essentially, David Child from Skidmore, Owings, and Merrill is the architectural firm, which is a very widely known firm, by the way. And that represents this guy, Larry Silverstein, who actually owned the leases on the original World Trade Center site. That's his guy that designed this new World Trade Center. I'm sorry, new Freedom Tower, excuse me. And, of course, one of the big things was that it had to come to 1,776 feet.
Yeah, they're not slouching on the height here.
No.
You know, which I think is the right call to make. I don't think that – I think the original designs of making it not as dramatic, not as big as the old towers, you know, where some of the original ideas were just a series of small skyscrapers in an office complex. I mean, I understood that, but I think that – to honor, you know, what happened, to honor the memory of what happened, and also to honor what was, you know, what this city stands for, I say, you know, they're doing the right thing.
Well,
send
see,
it up there.
The interesting thing about honoring the city is that it is great in theory till somebody has to rent the space.
Right.
And then the question is going to be, which one of you are going to be in the top 3 floors of this place? I'll tell you, Mark, I have never felt as vulnerable where we are located here in Manhattan, as I did on September 11, 2001. When you start realizing, when you saw, I saw those towers go down that afternoon.
Well,
that morning.
You're not helping rent space here, Riley.
Well, no, I'm not. But I mean, it's something that you think about. And
no, you're right.
Months afterwards, you feel vulnerable.
And no, I did. I felt vulnerable, too. And I tell you, I you know, certainly at the beginning of Air America, I felt vulnerable just sitting in this building. You know, but, I honestly didn't think of that, you know, and I didn't. I know that the site in and of itself, just as it is, you know, a pit, you know, of a construction site, gets thousands and thousands of visitors a day.
Yeah.
And I know that if they opened an observatory and a monument there, that would get thousands and thousands of visitors a day. I don't know. You're absolutely right. Now that I think about it, whether I would be too quick to rent an office space on the 40th floor of that building.
Well, people need to realize that the original World Trade Center was not fully leased until 10 years after it opens.
All right, so then maybe they're projecting ahead and they'll give it some time. In just a second, we're going to talk about the Downing Street memo and some movement in Congress and some movement that some actions that you can take, because this thing is picking up some momentum in the places it needs to. It's 17 past the hour. You're listening to Morning's Edition with Mark and Mark. It's Air America Radio.
Morning's Edition.
Just wake up.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
I've heard about those people.
On Air America Radio.
Thanks. 7, that's 1-800-774-7007. The call is free, the information is free, but the knowledge could be priceless. Barclay Financial, mystery solved.
Twenty-one past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
Good morning's edition on Air America Radio. Dig it. How about that? Dig it. It's Thursday. I hope you're having a pretty decent morning. House Judiciary Member Congressman John Conyers is leading a group of Democratic Congress members in giving Downing Street memo-related speeches tonight on the House floor. That's if everything goes as planned, Riley. The speeches were supposed to go down on Tuesday, but the Republicans coincidentally scheduled some late-night votes that day. Not like they take it. These guys, you know, Conyers has taken enough flack. You know, Gerald Nadler's taken flack from baby man Sensenbrenner. They've tried to shut these people down before, these Congress members. The Downing Street memo basically implicates the president and Tony Blair in fixing intelligence around policy in order to go into Iraq. This has picked up a lot of steam in the media, thanks to the blogosphere, which didn't let it go. It's now it's now being talked about freely by the media, by the mainstream media, and I hear Harry Reid's even dropping hints.
Oh,
to
no,
it
not him.
Oh, sure.
Uh-oh.
Sure. Conyers also announced that he and several other Democratic House members will be holding town hall style meetings across the country on July 23rd. That is the third anniversary of the Downing Street memo. You can get information on this stuff, on how to get involved or what's happening in your area, I believe, at afterdowningstreet.org.
You know what's interesting about this, Mark? There's a piece in the Wall Street Journal, actually, from a couple days ago that says, Downing Street memo has lingering effect. And what it implies is that maybe like three or four people forced the media somehow, this huge corporate titan that we all work in, to cover the Downing Street memo somehow without a great deal of actual justification. It's fascinating to me to see the Wall Street Journal, of all people, blaming like three or four people on a blog for making the Downing Street memo more than it should be. That's the implication in this particular case.
You wouldn't expect anything less from the Wall Street Journal to trivialize it, to put it into that context, to call these sort of the hearings that John Conyers had, you know, inside of the Capitol building as, you know, mock hearings. I mean, they really condescended. But you know what? It's out there. It's picking up momentum. And there are Democrats, some Democrats, and a recently formed coalition of liberal groups are calling for a resolution of impeachment inquiry, which would direct the Judiciary Committee to launch a probe. Now, Conyers is not on board with this. A lot of the Congress people are not. Barney Frank is not. What they would rather see happen is to do an inquiry of calling for, what is it, not to impeach, but to for investigation.
Yeah, for a resolution of inquiry.
A letter of inquiry, which is being circulated by Representative Barbara Lee of California already. Again, you know, this would just, you know, open up questions, force the administration to answer questions. Whether it will happen or not is not necessarily important because it feels like a long shot. Yeah, obviously, impeaching this president is a long shot.
It's a long shot, but remember that the first step in the attempt to impeach Bill Clinton was the naming of a special prosecutor.
Right.
Somebody who can actually look into this. Now, what Congressman Conyers has said is that people that they ought, the Congress ought to send investigators to London to get to them. But remember, this stuff was all generated from Great Britain. And Conyers believes that perhaps the Congress ought to begin investigating this thing from Great Britain. But I just believe that, you know, if you have a special prosecutor to find out whether somebody lied about sex, then you ought to have a special prosecutor to find out whether somebody lied about war.
Yeah, and I'm certain I don't want to, you know, I don't want to, you know what, you know, it's not a long shot. We can do it. Listen to my defeatist attitude. I say that we can impeach the president. I just think that it's important that this is out there and that people get, you know, behind it and people get, you know, put it out there to people that don't know about it. And this is one of those things you can just tell a friend, did you hear about this thing? And you'd be surprised how many people don't know what the Downing Street Memo is, how many people don't know who John Conyers is, how many people don't know who their congressman is.
Well, and see...
And what, don't quiz me.
Yeah, right. What's interesting about this, too, Mark, is that Bush really did not have to address any of this when it came to the press conference, not the press conference, the speech he gave the other night on Tuesday. Sooner or later... If the drumbeat continues, he's going to have to address some of the allegations. Now, he can dismiss them. I wouldn't be at all surprised. I'd expect him to dismiss them. But he's not going to be able to continue to ignore them. Right now, it's just, well, they're going over old ground. It doesn't mean anything. It's not going to be good enough.
Yeah, but the truth, yeah, because, you know, he doesn't care anymore on some level. He's done. Bush is done. But I think you people out there who voted for Bush should realize, you know, because we have reports here that the approval of the Congress's job... Their job approval is down almost 10%, from 45% to like 37%. A lot of people that voted for Republicans, that voted for this president, are disappointed, are disillusioned. And, you know, it's now time to take the proper action. The Congress people that are behind Conyers in this are Sheila Jackson Lee from Texas, Jay Inslee from Washington, Julia Carson from Indiana, Louis Swatter from here in New York, Major Owens from New York, Bonnie Frank from Massachusetts. See what your Congress people are up to as far as pushing this information through. Go to Downing Street, after DowningStreet.org. Check out what's going on in your area. See if you can get involved somehow in getting this information out there and maybe, you know, getting Congress to start working for us. I mean, they just got a raise of $3,000 a year.
Yeah.
Let's get them start working in the right direction. Ask them some questions. Find out who your Congress people are. Coming up next, I guess we're going to talk about, we got the iNews 5000 and ABC cancels a very questionable television reality show that might have dealt with lynching had it gone far enough. That's what I say.
Absolutely. It's next here on Air America Radio.
Morning Tradition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Bob
Springer on the radio.
Jerry Springer on Air America Radio.
Past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
Good morning. I hope you're having a decent Thursday. You're getting juiced up on whatever it is that you get juiced up on. It starts your day. You're listening to Morning's Edition with Mark and Mark on Air America Radio. We'll be broadcasting live from Vox Pop in Flatbush, Brooklyn next Friday. That's July 8th, so stay tuned next week for all the details on how you can see us live again in Brooklyn. Podcast Morning's Edition, would you? Kalo, the iPod ho, has told me that we are number 54 on the iTunes listing of most frequently iPodded bit of business.
You know what? We're slipping.
Huh?
We need everyone. We're number 59 now.
What the hell happened? What, I announced it, and all of a sudden people are like, you know what? Just to spite Maron, I'm not going to do it anymore.
Uh-oh.
Hey, everyone listening, go to iTunes and download us and subscribe to us and tell your friends to subscribe.
This is a good way to listen if you don't get us in the time slot you used to. You know, they screw around in radio, and we have very little control over that. I just wanted to let you people know that when they take us off in, say, Los Angeles, and you write us a letter and say, what'd you guys do? I had nothing to do with us. That's affiliate business that's really out of our hands. Today's guest coming up, former Capitol Hill staffer Jessica Cutler, Washingtonian. I don't know why I can't get that through my head. This was the blogger that swept with all the power brokers and whatever members of, you know, she's the dirty girl from who the Wonkette talked about, and she's written a book about a fictionalized version of all her dirty deeds, and she's going to come in here and hopefully be dirty later. And we're going to have a live performance from the John Butler Trio. From they're a rock band from Australia. They've been around for a few years, but I never knew about them until somebody turned me on to them. And I'm looking forward to that because this guy can seriously play some guitar.
Yeah.
Tomorrow, we're going to continue the conversation about mad cow disease. Today, there was a story that the cow that they found that had the disease was from Texas. He was awaiting his death in to be dog food. He'd been there for 12 years, did not enter the food chain. But there's a whole issue about the dog food thing, about expired dog food re-entering the feed chain. I need to talk to somebody who knows, and Eric Schlosser, the author of Fast Food Nation, will be here tomorrow to continue that conversation because I'm getting flooded with email about Mad Cow, about what I don't know, what I do know, who knows what, does anyone really know anything? Hopefully Eric, who's been on the show before, will have some answers for us. I'm looking forward to that. Also, what are we doing now? Oh, here we go. This is hilarious. This is, you know what? First, I'll do the iNews. but you should look forward to this. ABC had a reality show on the burner, ready to go, shot in the can, ready to go on the air. They promoted it, and civil rights groups actually stopped it. This is a great victory because usually it's Christian groups that stop things for being fun, and this is civil rights groups actually stopping a TV show from going forward for being wrong. So stay with us to hear what that is. Right now, let's get the machine out. It's time for the Wi-Fi headline translator because sometimes we don't know what the news headlines really say without the iNews. All right, here we go. From the San Francisco Chronicle, Bush okays shakeup of spy agencies. Translation, Cheney okays shakeup of spy agencies. From CNN, Capitol evacuated, Bush relocated in security scare. Translation, after scare, Bush admits to prank call, goes reluctantly back to work. From the Associated Press, all right, don't force it, Kayla. I don't want to hear the forced laughter.
Oh,
right?
Shut up, I have a cold.
All right. Wow. All right, from Associated Press, Freedom Tower features attack precautions. Translation, experts question plane repellent spray.
Ooh.
Plane repellent spray. Nothing. On... All right. I'm sorry. Yeah, I don't know about this new attitude. I understand you have a cold. Did you have the cold yesterday? Because an emailer had some comments about your attitude yesterday. No, we're going to get into it later. I'm going to save it. Savor it.
You're going to just roast the poor man over a spit?
He cares. He's over there with his cup of soup and his gum. All right, listen.
Free gum?
Hey, under pressure from...
Juice.
Okay. All right. I'm not going to do this right now. All right? Really? All right. Under pressure from civil rights groups, ABC Television canceled plans to broadcast Welcome to the Neighborhood. This is a reality show that let white suburban families living in a Texas cul-de-sac decide whether or not seven families, one black, one Asian, one Hispanic, and one gay couple, one of them could move into their community. They'd win a house.
Yeah.
But this is so heinous. I mean, apparently in the first two episodes, some members of the voting families are seen making like disparaging remarks about the gay family, questioning whether a Korean family was foreign born, and rejecting a white family who practiced Wicca. Where do they find these Wicca people? How do we get, what would be really weird? We can't just have a regular religion. Let's get the Wicca people in this. But the thing is all these people signed on, to do this, to win the house. So they agreed to it. They weren't forced to do it. And apparently one family was to be rejected each week until the last remaining family won the house, and the one that came in second was to be killed by the white families on the cul-de-sac. You know, that was the follow-up. Now, the critics of the show say it violated, basically, let's just quote this woman because I think it's important. Shanna Smith, the president and chief executive of National Fair Housing Alliance, said, quote, "The show directly violated the Federal Fair Housing Act by rejecting families because of their race, color, national origin, or the presence of children." So, but this is a show that obviously panders to the worst in American culture right now, and it panders to bigotry. It panders to the Republican sort of conservative sort of Christian extremist themes that we see in the culture right now. So good for the civil rights groups for actually stopping this thing.
Well, yeah, and the interesting thing about this, Mark, is that the neighbor that they were going to choose was supposed to fit in with this Christian Republican value frame that I guess kind of underpinned this entire series. And you wonder, you know, why would you pick an all-white Christian Republican neighborhood to do this in? Why not have a mixed group of people? Pass on a mixed group of people. It could be just as interesting, just as funny.
It would be just as interesting, just as funny, and perhaps more human. But I think the deal was is they were looking for market share. They were like, this is a group. The sort of conservative white Christian, especially on an organizational level, these are the family research councils, the Christo Fascist Zombie Brigades, who try to stop television programming because they don't agree with it. So they're like, well, let's throw them a bone. How are they not going to like this? We're going to entitle them to be what we think they are, which are narrow-minded bigots who want to impose their morality and way of life on everybody, no matter of what color, national origin, or sexual orientation.
Well, you know, the reason why we have housing laws in this country is to stop people from deciding who their neighbors can be based on things like race, based on things like sexual orientation, based on things like national origin. To ask whether a group of Koreans were born in this country, what difference does it make to you? What difference?
Right.
I mean, what sense does it make to have to allow these people to portray themselves?
Well, I think it comes really down to fear of people who are different. It comes down to like, well, what kind of smells are going to come out of that kitchen? You know, what are we going to have to deal with? What if we have to go over to their house and they have weird pictures on the wall? It's really discomfort that has manifested itself in fear, and it determines the ideology of these people.
Yeah, it does, and there ought to be some more enlightened television. I know I'm making myself feel like a fool for saying this, but there ought to be some more enlightened television programs.
We got a guy calling from Chicago who's got a different take on this. Gerald, how are you? What's on your mind?
What's up?
Doing good. How are you guys this morning?
Okay. All right.
What's on your mind about this?
My comment is the show should have been aired to expose the hypocrisies of American people. And it's not just white America. It's also black America, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I'm a black man of multiracial descent.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
So you're frightened when white people move into the neighborhood?
No.
Okay.
In fact, I live in an integrated neighborhood. There are Arabs, blacks, and whites, and Hispanics in the building I live in.
Oh, it sounds like my neighborhood. Yep. It does. I live in Queens. Must be a lot like Queens.
Yeah.
Well, I'm in Rogers, no parking in Chicago.
Okay. So you think the show should have been aired to show how these people think and how they behave and how frightened they are of people that are different than them?
Yes, and it should have been put on record for them to explain why they feel the way they feel.
Oh, that's interesting. I don't know if the show really did that.
I don't think they would go that far, but it would be interesting if they were pressed on it.
That's an interesting question.
Yes.
They should
yes,
have had
it. They would have.
Right. They should have done the show, run the episodes, and then done a sort of final show where they asked the people to explain themselves.
Yes, and then put the family across the table from them and show this is what they had to say. Why do you feel this way about this family?
Well, that's a different show. I think you should pitch that. I think you got a good idea there.
But guess what? That's reality.
That's right.
The reality that we live with every day.
Thanks a lot for your call, Joe.
Yeah, thanks for your call, Joe.
Thank you, guys. Keep doing what you're doing. I'm 100% by you. I invested in XM Radio just so I make sure I get you.
All right, man. That's much appreciated.
All right. Have a good day. That is interesting. See, that's the kind of show that you're talking about where you actually have a compelling interaction between these families who usually do this in secret. It's like, oh, there they are. Don't say anything.
Yeah, right.
To actually get them engaged and get them sitting down saying, well, this is why we're afraid of you because you people have the weird eyes.
Yeah. You listen to Eminem.
Yeah.
All that kind of good stuff.
That would be kind of interesting, but I don't think that's a show they had planned. We do have, but maybe I'm wrong. I, I, that would
would be a good twist, though, if the family that had to choose which family was going to be the neighbor, the twist would be, oh, you know what? They actually have to move to, like...
Oh, the other one.
Yeah, the other one.
The other neighborhood.
Yeah,
where those
they
people
have to move
live.
To the ghetto.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I get it. We got some other information on PBS doing something kind of devious. I think we'll get to that a little later. I think we might have a call. You know what? Yeah, just hang out. We've got a lot of stuff coming up. We've got, you know, Riley, did I say axe? Did I say axe when I said that?
No.
I don't think they asked them that.
No,
did
you didn't say that.
I don't even know. I didn't even know I had that in me. I think I got that from you. See, you got a cold. I got axe. Did you say axe?
Me?
Did you say that instead of ask?
No.
You don't?
I don't know. Maybe, yeah, sure, I did.
Oh, okay.
It's my fault.
It's Chris's fault, and we're going to talk about it. So we got the Future Mark coming up next. It's 46 past the hour. You're listening to Morning Sedition with Mark and Mark on Air America Radio.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningSedition.com. Air America Radio.
Deal right now for a free quote. 800-708-3095. 800-708-3095.
Fifty past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Good morning. It's Thursday. Hope you're having a big cup of go juice, whatever you need, caffeinated beverage, sugar, whatever it takes, man. Whatever it takes to make you like your day. How about that? The building is down here in New York. The new Freedom Tower designs have been released. The models have been shown. The new building will feature attack precautions. It's been placed farther away from the street than was originally planned. It was originally planned at 25 feet far away from the street. Now it's 90 feet. Now it's also the structural design is reinforced and supposed to be more resistant to truck bombs. It's got bigger, wider emergency stairs. It's got elevators and communications equipment that are going to be insulated and encased in 3-foot thick walls. Apparently, the building could also run to New Jersey if necessary. It can uproot itself and jump over the river. It can duck. It has a plane deflecting coating. What?
Yeah, plane like, deflecting
wait a
coating.
This isn't news anymore.
No. I'm thinking that, you know, there's a cartoon where they have these planes that come at a building and the building sort of lifts up its skirt and the thing flies underneath.
That's exactly what they based the new model of the building on.
Well, hey.
Yeah.
Hey, man.
Yeah.
Sorry to interrupt you, but Future Mark is online one.
Oh, I love Future Mark. Put him through. Hey, buddy.
Hey,
what's,
buddy
up?
What's up?
So, Future Mark, what's going on in 2050? Got any big plans for the 4th of July this weekend?
Oh, man. I am up to my ass in parades. There's one now.
Cool. Right outside your window?
Not cool. It's not like it used to be. What? You used to have like a couple of parades you go to a year? Now they're scheduled daily, and you're required to attend. Sometimes two, three, and they're all over the place.
I don't understand.
Freaking Chinese New Year parade. All right, see? Here's what happened. After the mad potato outbreak of 2020, everybody kind of freaked out.
Mad potato?
Yeah. Think mad cow times 100, man. One French fry, and you're a babbling idiot. And it was contagious, too. So for about 3 years, everyone just kind of shut themselves indoors with their clones and cocooned. Everybody avoided each other like the plague.
Wait, so how's the parade thing fit in?
Hold on, let this one pass. Okay, well, the government decided to deny basic services unless you interacted with other people. They developed this thing called earned human contact points, and they monitor the crap out of it.
Wait, so you got to go to a parade for human contact points?
Yeah, or else. All kinds of parades. And you have to be in them and act like you give a crap. If it's one of the 300 Mardi Gras parades, you better wear a mask and throw beads. If it's a gay parade, you better squeeze into some go-go shorts and start dancing. It's nonstop, dude. Today I'm wearing my lederhosen for the June-Oktoberfest parade.
Uh-huh.
Oh, crap. I just missed it, didn't I?
No.
Well, I'll just change into my construction worker outfit.
Oh, union parade?
No, another gay parade. I'm on the Village People float.
Wow.
Oh, man. I'm going to get in trouble talking with you. I'm missing all the required parades, dude.
Wait, so nobody enjoys this, man?
No, not really. people are pretty much post-emotional now.
Really?
You know how in 2005 you were starting to think, hey, everything's already been done?
Yeah.
Well, by 2050, everything has been done. There was this huge emotional void, and almost everyone was morbidly depressed.
Uh-huh.
And they figured maybe if we keep people constantly distracted, they will notice.
Wow, what parade is that?
The 1980s parade.
God, will that decade ever die, man?
All right, I gotta go. I'm in the 2 o'clock Hey, It's Wednesday parade, and if I don't hit that, I'll just have to do the 3 o'clock. Missing the German parade kind of screwed me.
Hey, dude, wait, before I go, is there anything you want to, you know, warn me about?
Yeah, War of the Worlds comes out Friday, right?
Yeah.
Go and take notes.
Hmm.
You're gonna need them. That's all I'm saying.
Huh.
Well, that's my parade. Later, man.
All right, later, buddy.
Oh,
the future seems complicated and overwhelming. So New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg, his ratings are like going through the roof, huh, Riley?
Yeah, and it's amazing to see and to contemplate that just like a year ago, his approval ratings were half what they are now. His job approval rating is currently 50%. And 7 percentage points, that's 7 percentage points up from February of this year. And his support cuts across racial, class, and demographic lines in this city. In fact, he's running against, one of the people, the front runner for the Democratic nomination is Fernando Ferrer, Puerto Rican. And Bloomberg is getting like 30-something percent of the Latino vote in a head-to-head matchup with Ferrer, according to this poll.
Yeah, he's ahead of Ferrer by about, 15-20% on urban, like 10-12%. It's like 48%.
Yeah, 48-35. Yeah. But when you look at Latinos, it is amazing that Ferrer's support among Latinos has slipped since when he ran 4 years ago.
Well, I think that the whole public education thing has really helped him, don't you? That the characterization of the test score is rising. I think Bloomberg's been pretty present, and running around. It's interesting when you got a guy like him who has a fortune. And obviously he's taken a lot of heat for the West Side Stadium stuff and for some other decisions he's gotten behind. But ultimately this is a guy that just wants to be mayor. He doesn't need the money. He's not looking to go anywhere else in politics.
No, he gets a dollar a year for being mayor. But you know what's interesting? If you want to look at a window as to why Mike Bloomberg is relatively popular, consider that the story we covered at the top of the hour, the story about the attack in Howard Beach, Mike Bloomberg was on the phone to Al Sharpton last night saying that the city would get behind prosecuting this as a bias crime and would put the full weight of its support behind putting these people away.
Yeah, and he went out there and he was talking to Ray Kelly, the police commissioner, immediately. I mean, I guess it's interesting because, that's what New York mayors do.
Some New York mayors, not all.
Yeah, well, I mean, I haven't lived here that long, but he gets out there. I think I get the feeling he really loves his city, that's for sure.
Yeah, but you know what? Mm-hmm. There's always something to be nervous about when people think that someone is a lock to win a particular elected office. In this city, no one is ever a lock, ever.
Right. Well, look, we're going to get into some more stories. Things have gotten a little hairy in Afghanistan. There's a story about PBS I want to talk about. And, of course, the Downing Street memo momentum continues. And we've got some great guests. So all that's coming up next here on Air America Radio. You're listening to Mark and Mark on Morning Sedition. It's 57 past the hour. Six past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition with Mark and Mark. I am Mark Riley.
You are Mark.
I am. You're Mark Riley. I'm Mark Maron.
Oh, you sure now?
Yeah, I am.
You got a mirror?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I know which one I am. I think I do. I am Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Good morning.
Hope you're having a good day out there. Doing whatever you got to do to get it started. In a few, we're going to have former Capitol Hill staffer Jessica Cutler, whose new book, Washingtonian. She was the famous blogger who was having sex with all those people in Washington. She's going to come out here and be lurid.
lurid. I like that.
Lurid and dirty and tell us some stories. That'll be good, won't it? We don't get dirty enough on this show.
We don't?
No, I don't think we do. Hey, folks, here we go. If you're just tuning in, here are a few highlights of what we talked about on the program. It's time for today's Morning Sedition Cliff Notes. Two French journalists held hostage in Iraq say the terrorists had hoped for a Bush re-election.
The terrorists said that they and Bush were after the same thing. They were both determined to destroy America in their own ways. They also said, quote, not only do we support Bush, we even used W in 2004 bumper stickers to tape hostages' mouths shut.
No.
Ralph Nader, a Ralph Nader campaign aide, pleads guilty to voter fraud. James Polk, the election coordinator for Ralph Nader's campaign, has been sentenced to 30 days home detention. Nader himself has been charged with obstruction of votes and entering an election with intent to kill it. After a long investigation, the USDA fails to find the cause of the tiger attack on magician Roy Horn. The USDA has ruled out that the tiger was hungry, that someone spooked it in the audience, or that a terrorist sprayed it with a mind-altering scent. Federal investigators still don't know what caused the attack, other than it's a wild animal that was dragged out of Africa and stuck in the middle of a desert in a house with two freaks. And forced to do shows, you know, two shows a night, six nights a week in a casino. Maybe it's starting to get a little pissed off about it. What do you think? It's a an animal.
Yeah.
It's a tiger. All right. It's a tiger. That's why. Tiger. Tiger's a wild animal. All right. Good for you. Good. That's good, Chris. Thanks for all your support there. I'm not picking on you. But I will read an email in a few minutes.
Oh, Lord.
That's all I'm saying about that one.
I was laughing. My mic wasn't on.
Oh, I've heard that excuse. Yeah, I know that one. Hey, I was enjoying it. I just wasn't paying attention. My mic wasn't on.
I hear you get that a lot.
Oh, boy. A symbol for racial intolerance and violence in this country has been for, you know, certainly since 1986, Howard Beach here in New York in the borough of... Brooklyn, that would be, yeah.
Howard Beach, Queens.
Queens, yes, yeah. Queens. Of course, not near where I live, but there was an attack, was it, the night before last, give me the time on this, Riley.
Well, it was early yesterday morning.
Right,
you're talking
okay.
About 3 o'clock, essentially, in, Wednesday morning.
Right. So a black Cadillac Escalade pulls up. A bunch of white guys get out, chase down 3 black guys. One of them falls, and they beat him with a metal bat.
Yes.
They steal his shoes, call him racial epithets, and leave him bleeding, and he's now in serious condition.
Yes, and one person has been taken into custody, a 19-year-old unemployed man from Howard Beach named Nicholas Minucci, who has a bit of a background with law enforcement. He's been arrested before. He's being charged with first-degree assault as a hate crime that carries a sentence of from 8 to 25 years. His family... And I guess this isn't really all that surprising. You say, well, no, he's not a racist, and we're not racist. I think they're more concerned about how they look than maybe how he looks.
Well, you know, it was just, you know, coming off of the conversation we had yesterday with a journalist from The Nation, you know, about, you know, racial, institutionalized racial intolerance in the South and just the history of racism in this country. And, you know, in getting into the North a little bit, this is how it looks here.
This is how it looks here, and it is something that I think a lot of people cannot really envision. The nightmare of feeling like you're running for your life in an urban neighborhood in the middle of the night. And, you know, no matter, because, again, they say, the cops say that the victims here admitted they were in the neighborhood to steal a car. How they got that out of them, I'll never know. But let's say for the sake of argument it's true, it really doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Because the idea that you have to run for your life, that people are chasing you essentially to kill you, because, you know, you got people coming after you with a baseball bat. I guess the inference is they're going to do you some serious, serious bodily harm. It is an extraordinary nightmare to have lived.
And that's what happened in 86.
That's what happened in 86, and someone
car,
was
yeah.
killed. Michael Griffith was killed. I know his brother, actually, his brother Chris, who was profoundly changed by that.
I would imagine.
Yeah.
In the grand jury case looking into the possible unlawful disclosure of the identity of covert CIA operative Valerie Plame, Judith Miller of the New York Times and Matthew Cooper of Time Magazine were told by a judge on Wednesday that they do not, if they do not agree to testify in this, Riley, about their confidential sources, in a week, they'll go to jail.
Yeah.
Now, this federal court judge, Thomas Hogan, said he's going to impose a very large fines against Time Magazine. And now Time Incorporated, the lawyers for Time, are saying, you know, maybe we better act on this because they don't want one of the reporters in jail. They don't want to be fined. Maybe we should give them, you know, if they're up against it too, the Time Incorporated, the Time Corporation, if they don't turn over research materials that were used in this investigation, they might go down as well.
Well, yeah, and it's interesting. On the one hand, the New York Times, who Judith Miller writes for, was not a party to all of this because they did not have any documents. Time, on the other hand, does, and now you've got prosecutors and you've got judges saying, well, it's one thing for a reporter to say, I'll go to jail over this. Something else for a corporation to defy an order of the court that has been upheld by the highest court in the land.
Is it assumed that these reporters know the identity of the rat, the identity of the person that turned over Valerie Plame's identity?
I don't think that is a given here. I think to some extent they wanted to find out exactly what they knew. And still a mystery for people in all this is exactly the level or the extent of Robert Novak's cooperation with this same grand jury, because remember, it was Novak who outed Valerie Plame in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And we've, of course, had Ambassador Joe Wilson on this air discussing this issue.
Yeah, and every time we talk to him, he's like, well, I'm going to get him.
Yeah.
And we haven't found out who did it yet, you know. But I you know, this is it's interesting stuff. Now, if Time Magazine decides to pay the fine, you know, how will Matthew Cooper feel? He's holding out, but then all of a sudden his boss says, "I'm going to go ahead and give him the information."
Well, yeah, and remember that if Time gives up the information, Cooper does not go to jail. That's
mm-hmm.
the operative part of all this. And Time is kind of framing it in that context, saying, "Well, we don't want one of our reporters to go to jail, even though." The reporter says that he'll stand on principle and go to jail. It is an amazingly convoluted story, which is part of the reason why these people are going to go to jail.
Right. Elections are expected to go as planned in Afghanistan in September, according to a spokesman for Hamid Karzai, despite the fact that in the last 3 months, 465 insurgents have been killed, 29 U.S. troops have been killed, not including the 17 that were killed on a helicopter yesterday, 43 Afghani police and soldiers, approximately 125 civilians have been killed, and most of the country is off limits to AIDS workers. Also, not to mention, two American helicopters were shot down last week by the Taliban. One went down, and oh yeah, heroin production in the region has never been higher. But aside from that, the election should go off without a hitch.
Yeah, right.
And democracy will ring throughout the region if it's not drowned out by gunfire. What the hell is this? This is 3 months shy of the elections. This is, there's horrendous violence, a horrendous helicopter. A special ops helicopter went down yesterday. It was shot down.
Yeah. Rocket-propelled grenade, they think.
Yes. Completely out of control. And this is still, like I'm saying, it's 3 months before they're supposed to have elections, and they're characterizing this as pre-election violence. Let's be honest about it, Riley. It's out of control there. The war, it's uncontained chaos. You can't move around the country.
It is guerrilla warfare. See, a lot of people don't realize that folks that are involved in these kinds of activities, whether it's in Iraq or Afghanistan or whatever, they have studied the work of the Viet Cong, and for many of them, what the Viet Cong did was a template for what they're trying to do, at least tactically speaking. Now, there was a long stretch mark where there wasn't a lot of violence, or at least there wasn't a lot of notice about violence.
Reported violence.
Yes, reported violence coming out of Afghanistan. We've heard about some of it because we've talked to people. But now you see it starting to slowly ramp its way up because I think that the insurgents in Afghanistan, the Taliban, Mullah Omar, or whoever, they're beginning to realize that America's bogged down in Iraq, so this makes it the perfect time to start these kinds of guerrilla strikes, these kinds of guerrilla insurgencies.
It also makes it the perfect time to try to impeach the president. The Downing Street memo and Congress members of Congress who are behind it are pushing for at least an inquiry, and we'll have a lot of that coming up next, so stay with us. It's 16 past the hour. You're listening to Morning's Edition with Mark and Mark on Air America Radio.
You know, whoever with this phone system can themselves in the mouth and eat their own waste. You know, that's what I say. So leave me alone. I'm trying to get a good take and replay it back on my touch tone pad. So can I play and get a good recording so I can hear how it sounds? I got an inconsistent mental disposition.
Next message.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Now, 800-396-9711, 800-396-9711. That's 800-396-9711.
20 past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Stick around. We got Washingtonian Jessica Cutler is going to be here to talk dirty, I hope. Also, we have
you're looking forward to that, aren't
Morning Sedition's Morning Sedition Radio Theater. The Temple of Doom continues to unfold. But right now, let's take to task some members of Congress. Let's take to task the president. The day that the president looked into the faces of the soldiers at Fort Bragg, this was the day before yesterday, the conservatives in the House voted to underfund veterans' health care to the tune of about $1 billion. All right, it had been reported last week that veterans' health care was suffering a $1 billion shortfall. That was this year, and this was based on info that had to be pulled out of a Veterans Affairs undersecretary like rotten wisdom teeth, Riley.
Yeah.
The neocon death cult had always claimed that there was enough money there, as did the Veterans Affairs secretary, but now there's new data showing that obviously as escalating violence in Iraq and Afghanistan and more people, more soldiers returning home injured, that there's that the need has doubled.
You know, as a practical matter, putting aside the fact that we're talking about, you know, service people that are putting their lives on the line, let's leave that aside for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
It would seem to me as though when you have George W. Bush exhorting the American youth to enlist in the service, you would not allow something that benefits service people to be underfunded by $1, much less $1 billion.
On the day that you're sitting there talking to him? On the day that you're looking them right in the eye
and saying, hey,
we're on the same team here.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. So this president is obviously finished, and I hope that you people that voted for him are feeling some disappointment, some disillusionment. Clearly, your approval rating for the congressional, for Congress, the job that Congress is doing, has drifted by about 12 points. It's down from 45% to 37%. That means you're all disappointed. That means you should contact your Congress people. Tell them why you're disappointed. Find out what they're doing. Understand that they work for you. Understand that they just gave themselves a $3,100 a year raise. You know, they voted on that. They said we're going to take in a little more money, $165,000 a year or so that these Congress people are getting. Are they doing the job that you want them to do? I know that there's a few people that are. House Judiciary Member Congressman John Conyers is leading a group of Democratic Congress members and giving a Downing Street memo related speeches tonight on the House floor. That's if the Congress Republicans don't stop them again, Riley.
Well, you know, the Republicans have been attempting to keep all of the Downing Street memo issues, all of the run-up to the Iraq war issues, as far away from backwashing both on them and on the president as they possibly can. This has forced John Conyers and others who have been asking these questions to hold hearings in what appear to be closets in many instances. Now you've got them getting ready to get up on the House floor, if they can, to speak out and say to folks, look, this needs to be investigated. And, you know, since these folks gave themselves a $3,100 raise without, and it was tricky how they did that, by the way, Mark.
Yeah.
This was a cost of living adjustment that they would have gotten automatically under a 1989 law.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a Democratic congressman named Jim Matheson mm-hmm. that wanted to force a floor vote on the increase so that each and every member of Congress would be on record as saying, I'm giving myself a raise.
I need more money.
Well, that got shot down 263 to 152. And this is exactly what is going to end up happening with these efforts to get to the bottom of Downing Street. The Republicans have the majority in both houses of Congress, and it makes it very, very difficult for the Democrats to get any momentum and traction here, even though some of these members of Congress are expressing doubts about Iraq.
Well, I'll tell you that, you know, that some people, like the people like Gerald Nadler, who has been on our show, he's behind it. He's behind at least getting, this into the cultural dialogue. Now, whether or not they can actually file papers for impeachment, they probably can. Whether you're going to be able to impeach this president, I don't know. There's no reason we shouldn't try. I mean, right now, there's Barbara Lee of California is already circulating a letter of inquiry, calling for this administration to answer some questions. There are some liberal groups that have created an alliance to push for letters or what did you call it? Papers of impeachment, files of what?
Inquiry.
It's an resolution of impeachment inquiry. You can go to afterdowningstreet.org and get all the information. There's also supposedly some town meetings are going to be scheduled across the country. anniversary on July 23rd, which is the third anniversary of the Downing Street memo. If you don't know what the memos are about, they're basically a communique that was received by Tony Blair implying that he was requested to fix intelligence around policy in order to justify invading Iraq. The information has been out there before in other forms, but this seems to really sort of galvanize a lot of the left. It's galvanizing some members in Congress, obviously, and other members. It's spreading. People are starting to talk that this thing, you know, has some traction, and they're referring to it when they speak in speeches and in conversation.
Yeah, and the long and the short of this, Mark, is that the British in 2002 were under the impression that there was some wiggle room as far as a war in Iraq was concerned in terms of Saddam Hussein and allowing the weapons inspectors to come in and look for the weapons of mass destruction, all of that. And what Blair was told in those memos was, no, the Bush administration has already made the decision.
Mm-hmm.
And now we have to decide, when I say we, I'm talking about now the British government, had to decide whether or not they were going to get behind what was clearly, to most of them, around Blair, a fixed policy already, something that was a done deal.
And with all of those people out there, you know, some of our lurking conservative listeners who are becoming disillusioned with what's going on in Iraq, with the sort of BS that the neocon death cult puts out in relation to what's going on in Iraq, if you know the truth or you want to get at the truth or you want to find out what your congressman is doing about it, you know, find out who they are, you know, shoot them an email. They just gave themselves a raise. $3,000 a year to work for you. So, you know, it behooves you to figure out who the hell it is and what they're doing in the name of you. That's what I say. Coming up, we've got Jessica Cutler. Some members of Congress are going to have some explaining to do if I can get some information out of her. She's the Washingtonian, and I hope she will come out here and talk about some filthy exploits with us.
Yeah. Coming up next on Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
The majority report, Air America Radio.
Janine Garofalo and Sam Cedar on Air America Radio.
Thirty-four past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yo,
Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. We got the Morning Sedition Radio Theater coming up in a few minutes, so hang tight for that. We just had to push it up a little bit.
Yes.
Last year, our next guest made headlines when her online diary about her sexual exploits became public. She was fired from her job in Senator DeWine's office and has now written a fictionalized account of her time in Washington. Please welcome Jessica Cutler, author of The Washingtonian. Good morning, Jessica.
Good morning.
Good morning. How you doing?
So when you went to Washington to get a job in government, did you assume that you would end up doing the government?
Who can you do for your country?
Wow.
What was the intention when you went there? I mean, I imagine you had some ideals at some point.
Well, yeah. I mean, I went there thinking I would get a job on K Street, like doing PR there, because I had done jobs in New York, you know, public relations, magazines and
stuff.
But when I got there, they were like, okay, we don't care that you worked at these New York magazines or whatever.
Uh-huh.
They're like, you don't have any Hill experience.
So you said, okay, I'll show you.
Yeah.
I'll have sex with you.
Something like that. I mean, it was like, I got Hill experience.
So now, Dan, when you had sex with members of Congress or whoever,
I did not. No.
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 Oh, we must have the wrong guest, Mary.
Yeah, I mean, hate to disappoint everyone, but I mean, that's not
the way it went down.
No,
just,
it was just
their
like,
secretaries and people who worked in the office.
It was just like staffers.
Oh, okay.
And there's one like chief of staff who told me he got his job because he was friends with W.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know if that's true or not. I mean, he might have been, like, trying to impress me or something.
Would that impress you?
I don't know. In a way, like, I mean, in a way, it's kind of like, wow, I'm 1 degree away from, you know, president.
Uh-huh.
That's interesting. But yeah, I was already seeing him before he told me this, so it wasn't.
So that wasn't a deal maker. That wasn't a closer. The W.
No,
you were already. So what? So in terms of people in Washington being, you know, is it a hypersexual environment? Do we need to know a little more? Like, are people just on the prowl constantly? You can't walk through
there. Yes.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, seriously, like, I would walk, like, you know, just out of the building and some guy will come up to you and start trying to take you out for a drink and mm-hmm. stuff. Or if you're, you know, working in the front office, answering the phones, you have lobbyists coming in, they hit on you. They're like, oh, what do you do after work and stuff.
Uh-huh.
It's very much so. There's a lot of single people there and a lot of married people whose, you know, wives are back home. And it really, it's, you know, everyone is looking to make a connection.
So you were fired from Senator DeWine's staff. Why is that? What happened with that?
Because I was keeping a blog and using my computer. And the official reason is, you know, using my computer for, I guess, personal reasons and stuff.
And that was the blog, the Washingtonian.
Yeah, but,
which,
you know, I thought it was common practice to goof off on your computer at work.
Sure.
Oh, yeah. What do you think he's doing with that? Now, did you ever run across people who had a political agenda in dealing with you at all? I mean, was there ever anybody that wanted some information out of Mike DeWine's office?
I don't think so. I mean, I dated, you know, guys in Democratic offices, mm-hmm. but they didn't want to talk about work when they were with me.
Uh-oh.
You know,
So on the average, in terms of, you know, sleeping with both parties, was there a difference?
Well, I think guys from the red states,
yeah.
Okay, they, you know, they probably haven't had as much, you know, they don't have as many, I think, options or choices, I think.
They're bad in bed. Go ahead and say it. They're limited.
They're freakier because they haven't really done anything, you know.
So they have no experience, so they want to treat you like perhaps a farm animal or...
Well, they come to Lake Washington, and that to them, that's like a big city.
Uh-huh.
And that's like their first time, like, you know, being around a lot of women or being a lot around,
company.
You know, and there's like, you know, oh, there's sex shops here, and there's like swingers clubs, and it's their first time...
So
you know, around
moral,
that kind of stuff.
The corruption of the moral values crowd.
Yeah, right.
So what was one of the freaky red staters,
strap-ons.
Really?
Yes.
Good stuff. That's great.
That's deep. Anybody that's fall deep. In love with you? Did any of these guys...
You didn't even know he said that.
Yeah.
That finally makes sense.
You just said that's deep, Riley.
No. Did anyone ever fall in love with you among the people that you were with?
Well, yeah, one guy wanted to, I mean, it's like I can't believe anything anyone tells me. You know,
yeah, well, you're in Washington.
Wants to marry me.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. or, you know, things were getting serious right before the blog thing happened, and then, you know, of course, it was over at mm-hmm. that point. But it's, you know, it's in the past. It's bygones to me. I can't.
Okay, back to the strap-on. So
yes,
you've got a red state guy, and we don't need to go into detail, but you're saying that this guy, these are people that come to Washington, they don't have much experience, and they're completely surprised. So their first idea is like, hey, could you put that on? I kind of like that. So and Democrats, in the sense, more sophisticated, more sensitive in terms of sexual...
Well, I think, you know, if you have a guy from... a large, you know, say a New York or mm-hmm. Boston, you know, or maybe, you know, I think, or Miami or someplace like that, they, you know, they kind of crave normality. They want a nice girl. You know, a lot of them like the, you know, Southern girls
uh-huh.
or, you know, the country
uh-huh.
girls. But, like, the red state guys, they want, I mean, as far as their girlfriend goes, they
yeah.
want a...
Okay. Oh,
yeah.
As a girlfriend or as a hobby?
You know, a mistress.
Okay. So now that you've got this book out, this book is a fictionalized account of some of the stuff you did. Would you say that is a way to put
it? Yeah, it's a big composite of different experiences that I had and other people had. And
I've read a few. It's kind of dirty.
Yeah, do you like it?
It's exciting. It's kind of lurid. Now, so what happens now that you can never go back to Washington and work again?
Well, yeah. I think I could. I mean,
do you?
I mean, I handled my own, like, huge... PR crisis pretty
uh-huh.
well,
okay.
you know,
yeah.
So it's not impossible for me to, you know, actually go back
uh-huh.
to K Street and be like, look, you know, I got experience.
And I've got experience.
I wrote a book.
And maybe do you remember these pictures that I have? So I think I'll be working at this desk.
Well, you know, it's like, yeah. Well, no, I'm not a blackmailer or anything like that.
Right.
But if anyone does like hugely, you know, they embarrass themselves like I did.
Yeah.
I mean,
they write a book.
Well, it's you need someone there to keep their head on straight, and you know, they should give someone like me a call. I could do a lot of hand holding.
Oh my goodness.
Well, I'll tell you, it's great talking to you, and good luck with the book, Jessica Cutler. Thanks for stopping by. The book is The Washingtonian. It's got a very exciting, you know, sexy cover, and good luck with future endeavors. Come back and talk to us if you're in a, you know, a bind, or call us when you're about to you know, engage in a strap-on event with a red. If he's drunk, you can actually call us because you'll probably be up all night.
No, the camera phone.
No, you're
not looking.
Call us. That'd be good. Send us some pictures. That'd be great.
Videos would be nice.
We'll be back with Morning Sedition Radio Theater. It's 42 past the hour. You're listening to Air America Radio.
Hi, this is Mark Maron's mom, and you're listening to my son and his friend Mark Riley. They're very good boys. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Help support our troops in Iraq and Afghanistan. Operation Truth. We were there.
Paid for by Operation Truth, Incorporated.
The Morning Sedition Radio Theater Company players bring you their production of Mark Maron and the Temple of Doom.
When we last left Mark and Grace, they were tied together in an empty abortion clinic as the bomb planted by Randall Terry ticked away. On the plus side, at least Mark and Grace could spend their last remaining moments on Earth finally expressing their true feelings for one another.
Mark, you're a putz.
It's a stupid idea, Grace.
All I'm saying is we should at least try to shoot through these ropes. I did it in the trunk of a car once and escaped. That was the night I swore off men forever.
Shh. What's that? I hear someone outside.
I liberate this animal testing laboratory in the name of PETA.
Hold on. This isn't an animal laboratory. Where are the cages and disgusting odors?
Well, that guy kind of reeks.
Hey.
Don't try worming out of it, Malcolm. This obviously isn't the mascara testing lab. That's the last time I let you drive. I don't even know why you're in PETA. You don't even like animals.
Can we get a little help over here?
I had a cat until it jumped out my window.
Jumped or pushed? Hey, are those leather shoes?
Leather.
You've got to be kidding me.
Over here!
Over here! Hey, help!
Help! Hey!
What the?
Why are you tied up? What are you protesting?
No time to explain. There's a bomb in the room.
Hey, what's that rope made out of? Because if it's camel hair...
Hey, focus, Mr. and Mrs. Green Jeans. See that clock attached to the dynamite? Get rid of it now!
Why would I do that? We came here to plant a bomb.
Did they see they're protesting? Did I...
Throw that bomb out the window! This is an abortion clinic! Bomb! Abortion clinic! Get it?
I thought this place looked familiar.
Throw the bomb out the window now!
What, like this?
We thank PETA for liberating us and headed out to the parking lot. Where's our car?
You mean that smoldering pile of metal over there? Congratulations, boss. You managed to get car bombed without ever setting foot in Iraq.
Shut that thing off!
We need to find a bus stop.
I can't see a damn thing with this fog rolling in.
A man dressed in black stepped out of the shadows. I made him for a priest immediately.
What was your first clue? The white collar around his neck? The Bible? That music from The Exorcist?
Hey, this is my voiceover.
Mark Maron, lesbian assistant. My name is Father Damien, head of VSI Vatican, Satan Investigations. If you want to find the Antichrist... Come with me.
How'd you know we were looking for the Antichrist?
Turn on the radio.
Mark, it's God. I see you've met Father Damien. Try not to blow him up. So Tom Cruise is getting married for the third time. That proves if your brain is washed enough, it will shrink. Shrink. Is this on?
Let's roll. Before we go in this room, I have to warn you. Do not touch the person in the bed, no matter what they say or do.
Oh, look who it is. Father Child Molester. Where have you been at daycare trying to pick up a hot date?
You two wanted to find the Antichrist? He's hidden inside that 15-year-old girl. Little help?
Hey, what's with the lipstick lesbo? You couldn't carry Ellen DeGeneres' jock. And your girlfriend blows a softball. And Maron, you suck. Mark Riley has been carrying you for...
Grace!
Grace.
Stop strangling her. I can take a few insults.
Take back what you said about my girlfriend.
I said don't touch her.
Father?
Satan's gone. For now.
Hey, are you Mark Maron?
Why, yes, I am.
Can you get me an autographed picture of Janine Garofalo? I'm a big fan of hers.
Father, are you sure the devil isn't still in there?
Will Mark and Grace be able to combat the dark forces and discover the true earthbound identity of the Antichrist? What part will Father Damien play? What other horror movies will we reference? And how could such a sweet young girl become possessed by an interest in Janine Garofalo? Find out next week when we hear Mark say...
Just make it out to Christine. She's a big fan of yours, and she's possessed by Satan.
Okay, whatever.
That's next week on Mark Maron and the Temple of Doom. And stay tuned later for the morning's edition Real Theater Company Players heartwarming new sitcom, Life of Mark Riley.
Honey, I'm home.
What would you like for dinner?
The question isn't what I would like for dinner. The question is what dinner options are available and what would be the corresponding pluses and minuses of those particular options.
Okay. How about our vacation? Have you decided where you want to go?
Mad cow disease. Why isn't anyone talking about it? Is it the FDA's version of the Downing Street memo? What is the government trying to hide? We'll be talking about dinner, mad cow, and vacations. Plus, we'll be taking your calls as soon as I get back from the bathroom. Don't go away.
Mark, I'm worried about you. If you're going to the bathroom, could you at least take off the headphones?
That's later on Morning's Edition Radio Dinner.
Life with Riley.
Hey.
There you go. It's 52 past the hour here on Morning's Edition. Pushing the boundaries of taste and fighting the good fight, my friends.
Both at the same time?
Absolutely. There are a lot of big stories in the news this week, my friends, so it's time to get some bets down with our Inside the Beltway odds maker, Johnny K Street. Johnny, where's the action, man?
It follows me, baby.
All right.
You know, it's weird. I thought I saw my girlfriend in the hallway. She showed me some pictures of Carl Rove. I have to show you sometime.
Would you?
Anyhow, first of all, let me say that I think a lot of people out there listen to me on your show on Thursdays. Because yesterday on the Drudge Report, there was a story that said Hillary Clinton's odds for winning the White House in 2008 have improved.
Yeah.
She's now going off at 5-1.
Wow.
Making her the favorite over Giuliani at 7-1.
Uh-huh.
And Kerry is going off at 41-1.
Ooh.
Ouch. That's what we call nadir numbers.
Yeah.
Kerry's a great guy, but he has almost as much chance of winning as Harvey Firestein, who I think is going off at 30-1, and he's not even running.
30-1.
Hey, Johnny. You're obviously a big fan of the former First Lady. Do you have some kind of a personal relationship with
her? Whoa. Easy. What are you saying? You're talking about our next president now. What kind of president would hang around with guys like me, besides Kennedy?
Oh, yeah.
That was a president. Little story, if I may.
Yeah.
I remember Kennedy was at my Uncle Paulie Tolbooth's club one night. He says to my Uncle Paulie, "That's not what your country can do for you. Ask that blonde at the end of the bar if she wants a tour of Air Force One. And get me another girl." My uncle tells that story every Christmas. All right, let's make you guys some money. It's action time.
I want to do my Harvey Firestein impression. My money's on the table. What do you have, Johnny?
All right. A rock, baby. I'm pulling so much action out of Iraq, I might buy one of Saddam Hussein's old places.
Okay.
The president says we won't stand down until the Iraq forces stand up. Stephen Hawking has a better chance of standing up. 1,001, the Iraqi forces get it together by next year. Now, don't get me wrong. I hope they do. But have you seen these guys? You give them an M16, they break it into pieces and throw it at the enemy. It's all they know. You can't blame them.
Hey, Johnny, put me down for a C-note.
Yeah, put me down for 5 bars, Johnny.
Hail to the chief.
All right. Hey, Johnny, you own a couple of properties. What do you think about this whole eminent domain thing? The Supreme Court says it's okay for big companies to just take your house and give you a fair market value there.
I've been doing that for years. They don't call it eminent domain. I call it getting behind in the V.
Oh, yeah.
You have a house, don't you, Mark?
I do have a house.
I know you do.
So what else are we looking at, Johnny?
Yeah, Johnny, I need a little 4th of July money over here.
All right. Bush's poll numbers.
Uh-huh.
I haven't seen numbers that bad since the night I lost $100,000 on roulette.
Oh, man.
Never again.
Yeah.
100-1 Bush's approval rating doesn't hit 60% by the end of the year. This is such a lot. Cheney's got a yard on it.
Yeah.
I watched Bush's speech about Iraq. I've seen guys taking a fifth that were more convincing.
Oh, man.
This bet is what I call finding money in the streets, so
right,
to speak.
Put me down for 5 large on that, then.
Yeah, I'm down for 5 also.
Beautiful. That's what I call investing for your future. All right, I got a fun bet for you.
Mm-hmm.
Big New York story.
Okay.
Speaking of Kennedy, Lady Di said in her biography that she had a one-nighter with John F. Kennedy Jr.
Mm.
I don't think we heard the whole story.
Mm-hmm.
Get your money down.
Okay.
100-1 she did Bernard Getz. 500-1 Bill O'Reilly. 25,000-1 Larry King. Even money on P. Diddy. And the long shot, Karl Rove. That's going off at 5,000,000-1. You hit that, I'll tell you where Hoffa is. I got to get to court.
All right, wait. You got another case, Johnny, or what?
No, my maid ripped me off for 5 large and a pair of cufflinks Dean Martin gave me. I got to testify. Ain't that a riot? What are the odds? I'm out of here.
All right, take it easy. Johnny K Street.
Yeah.
Giving us the lowdown. Holly Feierstein.
Holly.
Mm-hmm. So what do we got? I want to tell people tomorrow Eric Schwasser is going to be on the show. We've been talking about Matt Cow here a bit, and I got a lot of questions. We got a little information today that the cow that was tested positive for Matt Cow was in Texas.
Yeah.
He grew up in Texas. It was a 12-year-old cow waiting to become dog food. It didn't, but I got questions about dog food, too, because apparently when that expires, it reenters the animal feed system. There's a lot of questions that are out there about Matt Cow. We don't know where it comes from. The disease itself is peculiar. I hope Eric Schwasser has answers for me tomorrow.
Well, yeah, and beware of fairy tales from the USDA and from the Agriculture Department.
Sure.
The happy ending kind of stories. Oh no, the cow didn't get into the food supply. Yeah, right.
Right. And also, there's a lot more sort of unknowns than I thought just about the disease itself, about prions and about Jakob Creutzfeldt's disorder. I don't know. The whole thing creeps me out. It makes me I'm excited to talk to him tomorrow. We later in today's show, we've got the John Butler Trio.
Yeah.
They rock. They're from Australia. Looking forward to them playing some songs. And we've got, the big stories. We've got the Downing Street Memo stuff. We've got stuff about Afghanistan.
Yeah.
And PBS. Just stay with us. All that's coming. Six past the hour, you're listening to Morning's Edition with Mark and Mark on Air America Radio. I'm Mark Maron, that's Mark Riley.
Yep.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes. How's everybody doing? You getting up, you going, you doing the go juice, doing some sugar, some donuts, some caffeine. What do you got going out there? Is it okay?
Yeah.
It's Thursday morning. Hey, you can look, we're going to be broadcasting live from Box Pop in Flatbush, Brooklyn next Friday, July 8th. We're going back to Brooklyn.
Yeah.
So stay tuned next week for all the details. And also, we got the John Butler Trio coming up to play live here in the studio. They're an Australian band who someone turned me on to. I don't remember who, but man, that guy can play some guitar, dude.
Yeah.
So let's get right into this, Riley. Under pressure from civil rights groups, ABC Television can't. Oh, by the way, Chris, we got an email about you. I know I've been talking about it all morning, but somebody's got some explaining to do, my friend.
Uh-oh.
What is it? We got some email, a little critical of Kalo, the Costco iPod ho.
Okay.
You understand?
So?
I'll get to it. So under pressure from civil rights groups, ABC Television canceled its plans to broadcast a reality show called Welcome to the Neighborhood, which let white suburban families living in a Texas cul-de-sac decide which of 7 families, one black, one Asian, one Hispanic, and one gay couple, would move into their community. No wonder they had a problem with it. Apparently, Shanna Smith, the president and chief executive of the National Fair Housing Alliance, said, quote, the show directly violated the Federal Fair Housing Act by rejecting families because of their race, color, nation of origin, the presence of children. You know what, Riley, this is amazing to me. In the first 2 episodes, some of the members apparently, they taped the whole season here.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, a couple of the voting families are seen making disparaging remarks about the gay family, questioning whether a Korean family was born in this country, rejecting a white family who practiced Wicca. Where do they find these people who practice Wicca? That's the other thing. It's like,
yeah,
these people are druids. You know, they couldn't pick a regular religion. They had to pick, like, you know, one that would make them go, that's really weird. What are they going to be doing? Are they going to be sacrificing animals in the back? But Wicca doesn't do that. And I know we have a lot of Wiccan listeners. And
yeah.
I'm making
We don't want to offend the Wicca community.
I'm making light, so please don't cast a spell on me. All right, anyway. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Again, all you Wiccans, you've been very supportive of our show, and I don't want to alienate you. So, anyway, see, this is what I got in trouble for. What, are you going to call me a girl again? Go ahead.
No, keep on apologizing.
Okay, thanks. Someone's changing their tune. Wait till you hear the email. Anyway, so one.
Did a Republican, did a Republican take offense to what you said? You better apologize, Maron.
Oh, they were Republican.
Hurry up, do it.
I know, what are you talking about, Republican? This isn't a Republican issue.
No, I'm just saying, you know what? Are you going to apologize to everyone that you...
Only if I'm wrong or if I want to be friends with them. Do you understand? You know, a lot of times, Chris, I don't know if you knew this, but sometimes you say things that are hurtful and unnecessary. You don't realize it in the moment because it feels so good to do it.
And sometimes that's okay because you're friends with someone, so you can say hurtful things.
All right, moron. So anyway, the
douchebag.
Oh, wait a minute.
This is getting pretty.
So apparently, on this TV show, this ABC TV show, Welcome to the Neighborhood, one family was to be rejected each week by this basically, you know, Republican Christian cul-de-sac. One family is to be rejected each week until there's only two remaining. One will be chosen to move into a house, and the other will be killed on the air. I'm kidding. I made up that part. But, Riley, so this is, like, as you were saying before, they're expected to behave a certain way.
They're expected to behave in a Christian Republican sort of way, whatever that is. But my question is, what do the people that get rejected, what do they get out of this? Do they get, like, a year of turtle wax like they used to on the quiz shows? What do they get?
I'm sure they get paid a little something.
A little something.
Yeah, I would imagine. They get to be, they get to be shamed by the dominating cultural force in this country that is heinous.
Yeah, it's heinous. And see, my problem basically is with these reality shows because, you know, these people don't get paid what people who normally act on television get paid. Somebody gets a house. That's wonderful. This is in Texas. Maybe it's worth $250,000.
But you got to live in Texas.
And you got to live
next
in Texas.
To conservatives.
And you got to figure Jerry Seinfeld was clocking $1 million per episode.
At least.
And here's somebody that's, you know, being watched by millions of people that's getting, you know,
you're actually right. Some of the writers of these shows who get credited as line producers or just producers were trying to unionize because a lot of these things are structured, a lot of them are faked, a lot of them are written.
Yeah.
But listen to this. The newly conservatized Corporation for Public Broadcasting has awarded a preliminary grant for a film on one of the designers of the neocon death cult, Richard Pearl. They're going to do a fluff piece. A biographical movie about Richard Pearl and the mental philosophical mainstays of the neocon death cult.
Yeah.
All right? And now, okay, granted, what they're doing another thing. They're also going to reach out to, or they have reached out to a dozen filmmakers to do separate films. Another film that's critical of the White House foreign policy. All right, this grant was awarded to Sherry Jones, who's won awards for her work on Frontline, and apparently both of these films are going to be part of a $20 million project called America at a Crossroads, which would create a series of films examining America's role in the post-9/11 world. But we'll see where this new conservative PBS falls because, you know, let's see which one gets made first. Let's see what time they air the one that is actually critical of the White House. I'm thinking it's going to be like I'm seeing a series on Richard Pearl, on Karl Rove. You just watch PBS become this propaganda machine. It's going to be horrible.
Well, at a point, Mark, people are going to have to start asking exactly what kind of PBS, what kind of corporation for public broadcasting are George W. Bush and his minions trying to create here? Tomlinson should be gone. Kenneth Tomlinson, the new head of the CP, he should be gone. There's no way he should be in that job. He was, by all accounts, some form of Republican operative prior to this. Mm-hmm. Why is he in this gig? And this whole idea that, you know, we have to present a balanced view. And hiring somebody to monitor Bill Moyers, he couldn't lace Bill Moyers' shoes.
Yeah, exactly. So look at this. Let's get into this again, too, because I want to make sure I try to get to people active and get them to activate. House Judiciary Member Congressman John Conyers, many of you know, is leading a group of Democratic Congress members in giving Downing Downing Street memo-related speeches. That's tonight on the House floor, if everything goes well. If fat baby man James Sensenbrenner doesn't throw a fit and shut him down, it should go on as expected. Although, it was supposed to go down on Tuesday, but the Republicans coincidentally scheduled some late-night votes. But if you want to know what is happening, Conyers has also announced that he and several other Democratic House members will be holding town hall-style meetings across the country on July 23rd. That's the third anniversary of the Downing Street memo. You can go to afterdowningstreet.org to get information, how you can get involved, how you can make your congresspeople work for you. Now that the tides are shifting a little bit and people are starting to disapprove of this president's policies in Iraq and in the nation, it's time to get involved. Find out who your congressman is. They've just given themselves a $3,100 a year raise. Make them work for it. That's what I say.
Let them earn it. But, we ought to recognize here, Mark, the power of some of the people who've been on the blog sending out emails about this issue and making sure that they just didn't go past the Downing Street memo.
Exactly. So coming up, we've got John Butler. The John Butler Trio is going to lay down some jams for us, so stay with us. It's 14 past the hour. You're listening to Morning Tradition on Air America Radio.
Morning Tradition on the air and online. MorningTradition.com. Air America Radio.
On 8833. Act now and we'll also send you a free 911 cell phone when you subscribe.
1-800-401-8833. 18 past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. That music you hear is from our next guest. They're an Australian band that has been making some major noise here in the United States. Their latest album is called Sunrise Over Sea. They are the John Butler Trio, a group that I'm very excited to have perform live for us because, you guys, correct me if I'm wrong, you've had tremendous success in Australia, right?
Yeah, we've been very fortunate. We've worked our butts off and gotten somewhere.
How long have you been doing it?
How long have I been doing it? Probably about 8 years.
And what are some of your musical influences?
Anything from Hendrix to Ray Charles to Gillian Welsh.
Uh-huh.
And the other two men in the band, Shannon Birchall and Michael Barker, are classically trained, and they have a lot of classical influences as well as a lot of modern influences as well. So, yeah, we kind of come from a whole gamut of different places, from death metal to classical, I guess you can say.
The full range.
The full range.
Now, you grew up in Torrance, California?
I grew up in La Mita, California, I was born in Torrance, next town over.
How'd the family get from California to Australia?
Well, my dad moved to California from Australia when he was 21, and then met my wife. My dad met my wife and had me.
Hold on, I'm getting my therapist on the phone.
And then had me and my sister. And then they decided a few years later to get divorced, and my dad moved home, and I moved with him in 86. And so I've lived in Australia for about 20 years.
Do you like it better than the States? Or why, just because it's more space, nicer?
Space. Yeah, there's a space issue. I mean, we are still basically a 51st state of America, so essentially our politics are just as backwards as anywhere. But I like the space, I like the landscape, and I like the culture. And
how much of your music is motivated by politics?
My music's kind of motivated by life.
Yeah.
And I think life is essentially emotional and political and, social and environmental. All those things have a lot to do with being a human being. So.
Absolutely. So what songs are you going to play today?
Today we're going to play a song called Treat Your Mama with Respect, which is an ode to this planet and how we treat her, and a song called Zebra or Zebra.
And that's, okay. All right. That sounds good.
So this is John Butler. You're the guitarist, and we're now joined by Michael Barker, who is on percussion, and Shannon Birchall on bass, eh?
That's right. Yeah.
All right.
All right.
John Butler Trio. Thank you.
know I got a recipe. You know I can cook and I come over. Only good intention. Oh, I am ever bound, but I surely will be on getting the job done like I know I should. Get the job done like my mama do. Only one thing I remember, she said, you gotta earn it all on your own. And I don't care a race or a color or a creed. I say all that don't bother me. Only one thing that you should not forget, you gotta cheat your mama. And I don't care what fashion, the style, or your head. I don't care about the cause or rules you do well. Only one thing that you should not forget, you gotta treat your mama with respect.
Treat your mama with respect. You better treat your mama with respect. Slap you upside down the head. You don't treat your mama with respect. Treat your mama with respect. You better treat your mama with respect. Slap you upside down the head. You don't treat your mama.
Let's dive in all of that. You're my man, go.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's the John Butler Trio with Treat Your Mama with Respect. It's from their latest album, Sunrise Over Sea. You can check out their website at johnbutlertrio.com. And I think we're gonna get another song out of them coming up. So stick around. Right now you're hearing their song, Pick Apart. It is it's coming up on 20. It is 27 past the hour. This is Morning's Edition on Air America Radio. More John Butler. I can't wait, dude.
Yeah,
I can't
me neither.
Wait.
So there ain't no need to be big about me. Cause what you get and what you see. Say a little help, I said a little crazy. But there ain't no need to be big about me.
Morning's Edition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Father.
Springer on the radio.
Jerry Springer on Air America Radio.
Thirty-four past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. Right now, we're listening to the album version of "Treat Your Mama with Treat Your Mama." The song that John Butler Trio just performed live here in the studio. It's from their latest CD called Sunrise Over Sea. Their website is johnbutlertrio.com. And I think we're going to hear another song right now, if I'm not mistaken. What song are we going to hear now, John?
We're going to play a song called Zebra, or what you guys would say as Zebra. And it's a nice little funky one for all y'all out there.
Okay, John Butler Trio.
I can be a rich like I'm on the range. I can be a poor like
Yeah, I could be ignorant, or I could be informed. I could leave my life a man, or I could be lit. I could be anything I put my mind to, for all I gotta do is give myself a half a chance. I could bring love back into my life and share it with the world if I got some balance.
You're listening to the John Butler Trio. That last song we heard was Zebra. How do you pronounce it?
Zebra.
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 Appreciate you guys coming. I really
Yeah, it was really nice. Really enjoyed it.
It was the John Butler Trio with John Butler on guitar and vocals, and also Michael Barker on percussion vocals and Shannon Burchall on bass and vocals. Thanks a lot, fellas.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a good one.
If you want more information on them, you can go to johnbutlertrio.com. Those guys rock.
They can play.
They rock. I'm gonna send my brother their record. Right now, I want to share with you guys and with the listeners a little segment we did yesterday. We're doing a little of this, Riley. We're gonna share some stuff that people listening at different times might not get to hear on different days.
Yeah.
So here you go. Here's a segment we call the War on Brains with Mort Milvington. Every week we bring you the latest news from the front lines of the four-year global war being waged by the Bush administration. And here with today's dispatch from the War on Brains is war correspondent Mort Milvington.
Dateline, the Pentagon, the world's largest office structure, yet so officially built, it only takes 7 minutes to move between any two points in the building, especially when you're running from a plane. The War on Brains continues, you unrepentant, echo-booming, sofa-ass heroes of the Burger Wars. While you were busy creaming over Avril Lavigne's latest pseudo-punk foray into fake teen angst, the neocon desk militia at Fort Bumble began a relentless march into the from their family circus-covered cubicles deep into your bedrooms, where they're now rifling through your Blockbuster receipts and sniffing your yoga mat. Last week, the Department of Defense, or DOD, announced the inevitable, that it was ready to collect personal and confidential information on 16 to 18-year-olds for a new Army recruitment database designed to help America do two things. One, kill more insurgents. And two, kill more college-age students.
Oh, man.
The database will include students' birth dates, social security numbers, ethnicities, grade point averages, fields of study, email addresses, and every sad thing Mark Maron ever wrote in the John Stewart chat room under the pseudonym Candy Girl.
Wait a minute.
Shameful.
Do I need to?
Ignominious.
All right.
Mark.
What?
The information in these files will enable the government to ruthlessly study and select our children for sleazy exploitation faster than a micro camera hidden in one of Michael Jackson's llamas. Soon, heartless recruiters will be roaming our neighborhoods like salesmen, searching for victims. And armed with so much sensitive personal information, it'll make the Scientologists look like Amway.
Recruiters? Door-to-door recruiters?
That's right, Mark. Ever meet a fellow by the name of Rumsfeld?
What's the fella's line?
Never worries about his line.
Never worries about his line?
Poor doggone thing. He's just a bang beat, bell ringing, big hall, great go, neck or nothing, rip roaring every time a bullseye salesman. That's Secretary Rumsfeld. Rumsfeld, Rumsfeld. He's an Army man.
He's a what? He's a what?
And he sells war to the kids in town with the big brass bombs and the rat-a-tat guns and the piccolo with you. Uniform suit with the shiny gold braid on the coat with a big red stripe running down.
But he doesn't know the territory.
Or doggone thing. It's just a bang, beat, bell, ringing, big hall, great go, neck or nothing, rip roaring every time a bullseye salesman. That's Secretary Rumsfeld, Rumsfeld, Rumsfeld. He's an Army man.
He doesn't know the territory.
You can talk, you can talk, you can bicker, you can talk, you can bicker, 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 you can talk, 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 bicker, 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 you can talk all you want to want.
All right, Mort, I'm through with this now.
Look, what do you talk, what do you talk, what do you talk, what do you talk? You can talk, you can bicker, you can talk, you can talk.
Mort, shut up. Shut up. Just shut up already.
Mark, Rummy's failed attempt at running a war doesn't give him the right to decimate the next generation of bad poets and philosophy majors any more than your failed career in musical theater gives you the right to yell at me for being a sensitive artist. Remember that the next time Marky Jr. comes back from the home ec class and tells you you hate his freedom. And that's today's dispatch from
the War on Brains.
That was very good.
Yeah, did yourself today.
Shipoopy, shipoopy. The girl was hard to get.
I was worried at the beginning because you're trying to get tangled up, and I thought, we're never going to get through this. But,
well, you know how it is.
You pulled it off.
It's like 3 in the morning, isn't it? I haven't slept.
Something like, you haven't slept? What were you up doing?
Writing this crap. Searching all over the internet for the Music Man. What are you doing?
That was Mort Milfington and the War on Brains from yesterday.
Don't let him back in here again.
No, he's going to come back in. Look, it's about 43 past the hour here. We're going to come back and get into our Cliff Notes and talk about tomorrow's show. And also, Kalo, I'm going to read the letter attacking you.
About time.
Yeah. We're going to get into that, too. There's some issues there. So stay with us. It's Morning's Edition with Mark and Mark on Air America Radio.
From Multivital, and you're listening to Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Morning's Edition. They're not the Messiah, they're very naughty boys on Air America Radio.
On the 90-day trial guarantee, call 1-877-289-9200. That's 1-877-289-9200.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
Morning Sedition. Let's land this thing. It's Air America Radio. I just want to thank Michelle for sending us a little. Someone just drew a picture, did a little flash animation thing, I think, of Sammy the Sem Cell. It's hilarious. Can you see it, audience? Just picture it. All right, Kayla, I'm sorry that whatever's going on in the break.
Oh, man.
All right, buddy. All right. Hey, Mark, I'm a faithful listener to the show, and I love you guys. As far as Kalo, he has a great laugh, which adds to the show as you hear him in the background. But
that's nice.
Yeah,
that's positive.
I didn't say it started out bad. But his railing at you, Mark, for apologizing to Dan this morning, admonishing you to, quote-unquote, be a man, and accusing you of acting like a, quote, baby or, quote-unquote, girl, and boasting that he doesn't even ever apologize because he means what he says. Well, it's not the first time that he irritated the hell out of me when he opened his mouth. You, Mark, greatly display both the goofy and the mature side of maleness. In fact, I do believe I am quite attracted to Mark Maron. Well, that was in parentheses. I guess I didn't have to read that. I wonder, not for the first time this morning, if Kalo's consistently pathetic attempts at faux macho-ness and his frequently insulting comments about women/girls is due to an insecurity in his own manhood generated by the fact that he has the voice of a prepubescent boy. I mean no harm, Kalo. Quote, wait, I'm not quote, parentheses, wait, I'm apologizing like a girl. Am I apologizing like a girl? But try to self-reflect and grow up a bit, eh? Really, it'll make you more the solid man and less the fumbling teenager. Failing that, at least try not to insult a good portion of the listening audience with your sexist comments. That's from Karen L.
And who exactly was I insulting?
You were, I think
the baby. Women everywhere.
I think
you're
right. I'm sorry, did I call someone a woman?
You called me a girl.
Oh, I called you a girly. Yeah. Oh, well, I'm sorry, Karen.
Yeah.
See, I'm sorry I offended you in my prepubescent voice. You know what? Bite me.
Oh.
Okay?
Oh.
Or you and your little clan, why don't you come down here and I'll kick your ass.
Oh,
how
my
about that?
God. I think that Kalo just
struck a nerve, eh?
Well, no, I think he just picked a fight with a woman.
It won't be the first time I beat up a woman, okay?
Oh, wait a minute. I think you're displacing a little anger here, Kayla. Do you want to, you're a little mad about a parking ticket, and I think you're taking that out on Karen.
No, I don't think so.
I have never,
we're going to hear, you know, sometime next week, we're going to get a call from the security guy downstairs. There's a woman named Karen waiting in the lobby to speak to Chris LaPresto.
Next week, you think she's going to come down? It's weird. You never know how far away these people are, Chris.
Yeah.
I had that moment today, Riley. I'm making my breakfast. I get up, right? I get up in the morning, and, it's 3:30 in the morning when we get up, and I'm cooking my breakfast in my kitchen. I look out the window. There's a SUV parked on the corner down from me with its lights on, its flashers on. There's a guy just standing outside of it, and I'm on the fourth or third floor of my building, and I'm looking down, and there's just a guy standing there looking up. It's 3:30 in the morning, and I'm in my kitchen with the light on. And I'm like, it's going to happen right now. I was looking for the little, I actually had that moment where I'm like looking for the little red laser point.
You know, like the like I was going to take a bullet or something. Wait a minute. We got someone on the phone. We got Marjorie in California. Yes, Marjorie, what's on your mind?
Hi, Marjorie.
Hey, guys.
What's going on?
I see you guys every morning.
Oh, thank you.
And usually I get you guys on the rerun, you know, from 6 to 9 here in California. But I was up early this morning, and I heard what Kalo said yesterday, and I was so disgusted.
Oh,
what were you disgusted about?
I would
about?
Make Kalo cry.
Do you think you could make Kalo cry?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
no
why? Would you show me yourself naked?
Oh.
Would that make me cry?
No, that would make you sad.
Oh, wait a minute. Now this is getting weird.
You can't have it.
Who are we trying to beat up here?
He couldn't have it. I knew that.
Oh, he couldn't have it. Okay, good, good, good. Nice. That was a good one. That was a good rally, Marjorie. So, yeah, I've been trying to make Kayla cry for a year. And I haven't.
You've got to punch him really hard in the stomach.
Oh, okay. So are you saying that you could punch me in the stomach?
Absolutely.
I
have to kneel down a little bit.
Oh.
You know what? Come on. The door's always open for you. Okay?
Thanks for your call, Marjorie.
Yeah.
Thank you, guys. Bye.
Lord, Lord, Lord. And you know how many scheduled flights there are from California to the New York area?
She's on her way. So I didn't get shot this morning. I just thought I'd tell you that.
But he was looking up at you, this guy?
Who the hell knows? I was just paranoid because I had that moment where I shut the light off. Because, you know, you think when you hear about the deep throat guy and you start thinking about movies, that's the way it goes down. And then I'm thinking, like, the reason they didn't shoot me, Riley, was they were just trying to send a signal. Am I being too paranoid? I thought they were trying. Okay, I am.
Yeah.
All right. Maybe you're right.
New York. Yeah, you're right.
It's just all of a sudden I feel like the show is like now it's like this open challenge that it's like Andy Kaufman, Kalo's now going to wrestle women on our show. It's like the entire.
Chris, I don't know how you got into this.
But it's a new direction. Danny Goldberg told me.
Bring management into the picture now.
Oh boy, you know what? If you don't want to work here, Chris, that's okay. Now, I wanted to talk about this yesterday. I wanted to, if I can just find it from yesterday, I wanted to reach out to the wonks of the world, if I could. Yeah, there was this, here it is, I believe I have it. Yes, the Center for Democracy and Technology, a Washington-based technology policy organization under the auspices of the Library of Congress that employs hundreds of analysts that turn out hundreds of briefs each year and on a wide range of topics that have previously been reserved just to members of Congress, have decided to free the information on a new interactive website at www.opencrs.com. www.opencrs.com. It's only right. The organization has I wrote that. The organization, apparently, the organization's got a budget of like $100 million. It's got 3,300 reports and frequent updates that were gathered by the center and five other groups, the Council on Science and the Environment, the Federation of American Scientists, the Library of the University of Maryland's Law School, a website affiliated with the Franklin Pierce Law Center in New Hampshire, and the Memorial Institute for the Prevention of Terrorism. That's www.opencrs.com. It's just a lot of people who are out there doing blog work and doing their own research. I think this could be a tremendous resource for them. For those of you who are just tuning in, here are a few highlights of what we talked about on the program. It's time for today's Morning Sedition Cliff Notes. Two French journalists held hostage in Iraq say the terrorists had hoped for a Bush re-election. Damn, couldn't John Kerry win anyone over? A Ralph Nader campaign ad pleads guilty to voter fraud in Virginia. He also pled guilty to something called criminal idealism. Now we're going to recount all Nader's votes in Virginia. Here goes. One, two, same as before. That bastard, Nader, I knew that after saving countless lives as a consumer advocate and running for president as the only valid alternative to corporate whores living off a bloated plutocracy, he had to be bad. After a long investigation, the USDA fails to find the cause of the tiger attack on magician Roy Horn. An investigator who examined Manticore, the tiger after the attack, said the animal appeared normal. However, experts point out that normal for a Bengal tiger would include mauling people. All right, here's your phrase of the day. Just drop this in the conversation. So there's no conclusion to the Siegfried and Roy target mauling investigation. Wake up, sheeple. The lion is the fall guy. Roy saw something he wasn't supposed to see at Elton John's house, and they tried to take him out. I mean, think about it. What kind of a lion would go back and to the left? Look at the film again. Back and to the left. It's so obvious, don't you see?
My goodness.
Mad Cow tomorrow, Eric
Mad
Schlosser.
Mad Cow tomorrow. You know, I'm getting scared of this, and I don't even eat red meat.
Eric Schlosser's he's going to clear it up, the author of Fast Food Nation. We got a lot of questions.
Yeah, and we've also got a giveaway in conjunction with the new War of the Worlds movie. I'm not going to tell you any more about that. You got to listen tomorrow to find out what the deal is.
Right on. Yep.
A lot of fun today, Maren.
Good show, Riley.
Good show. We'll see you tomorrow. This is Air America Radio.